This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Matthew Smith in for Julie Glenn. Hundreds of arrests, more than 100 crashes, dozens of injuries. Those are the numbers from just one 18-month period in Pinellas County after what law enforcement calls a rampant juvenile auto theft surge. In the second half of our show today, we're going to listen back to a conversation we had with reporters at the Tampa Bay Times, who built a database to track the thefts, arrests, and personalities that hit this Gulf Coast county so hard, and how the emboldened thieves boast of their latest carjacking with videos on social media and the frustrated police response with a system that sees young offenders back on the streets just hours after their arrest. But first, residents of South Florida consume 145 gallons of water every day per person. That's the highest water use in the state of Florida. That's according to statistics from the South Florida Water Management District. About half of a household's water is used to water lawns, according to estimates from the Environmental Protection Agency. Some researchers put that number closer to 90% for lawns in South Florida. That can lead to gallon upon gallon of wasted water down the drain during regular lawn watering, even as other parts of Florida are parched from a lack of water, even during the rainy season. Today, we're talking with the author of a new study from Florida Atlantic University that found an effective way to curb wasted water when it comes to lawn care use. Joining us today is Dr. Tara Root, an associate professor with FAU's Department of Geosciences, whose specialty is in groundwater and water resources. Dr. Root, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us today to lend his expertise to questions about water use and water waste in your home or garden is Ian Orlikoff, an internationally certified arborist who works with Signature Tree Care in Naples. Ian, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
We are talking about water research and a new report out of Florida Atlantic University looking at ways to limit your water waste when it comes to lawn care, and talking with an expert who can help you choose the right plants to reduce your water use. Call with your thoughts and your questions. 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. You can check us out online. We're on Facebook. Find us at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, check us out. Our handle is at WGCU. Tag your questions or comments with the hashtag GCL. Dr. Tara Root with FAU, before we get into this new study of yours, let's make the case for how big of a problem water waste is when it comes to lawn care in South Florida, and why it's something that people in our part of the state, where we're already getting used to the daily deluge of rain in this rainy season, why it's something we need to be aware of.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, lawn water use is actually a very significant portion of our household water use. So upwards of 50%, in some cases, as you mentioned, 90% of our household water use goes to lawn water use. And that ends up being just an absolutely tremendous amount of water. Just for example, statewide, we use about 2.5 billion gallons of water a day from private household wells and public water supplies that are delivered by water utilities. Now, not all of that water goes to individual household use, but a significant portion of it does. And since lawn water use is the biggest portion of household water use, reducing lawn water use is a really good way to make a dent in that 2.5 billion gallons a day of water use.
And I can hear some people, myself included, thinking, well, we get so much rain. Is water waste really that big of an issue in the rainy season? And I guess rainy or dry season, that demand on our water in South Florida is still there. Does the rain mitigate things at all?
So certainly in the wet season, I mean, we you know, the kind of mantra with water resources is having water when you need it, where you need it. And certainly we tend to have, you know, less stress on our water resources in the rainy season. But really, when you're using water towards your lawn, you're taking water out of that natural system. Up to 50% of the water that we use on our lawns ends up being basically wasted towards either evaporation or runoff. It actually doesn't go toward the lawns. And in addition to the water use itself, when we're applying water to our lawns, that water has a chance to pick up chemicals, fertilizers, and pesticides and herbicides that we may apply to our lawns. So we may be promoting water contamination when we overwater our lawns. Additionally, any water use ends up having an electricity cost with it, because to pump that water and treat that water takes a fair amount of electricity. So it ends up being a fairly complicated issue, but yes, even when it's raining and it seems like there's less stress on our water resources, there's a lot of really excellent reasons that should motivate us to reduce our water use.
Yeah, it's something that I think people are aware of when it comes to wasted energy, but wasted water also has that energy component to it. I want to ask arborist Ian Orlikoff, when you're meeting with clients or people talking about their landscaping needs, are they even talking about reducing their water use? Is it a concern of theirs?
It's very far and few between. I think we take water for granted because it's just typically always available to us. I think in other areas of the country where we're seeing much more severe droughts than what we've had, turning off the water is going to be a huge wake-up call. And I foresee the amount of people that are going to be moving down to this area one day where that may be a potential issue. So I certainly think that the more people have become aware of the importance of water, such as talking about this today, as those issues may become closer, they will certainly be asking more questions as more people move into this area.
And that concern for water has gone back. We've seen past governors make these important declarations. They're going to try and solve the water issues, the water crisis of South Florida, the increasing development, the tax on limited resources when it comes to water. And it's a conversation that I hear happening frequently, but it doesn't seem to have a clear answer. Let's turn now, Dr. Tara Root with FAU. Tell us about this study that you and your doctoral student, Felicia Service, conducted. What was your hypothesis about reducing water waste going into that study? What did you design to test it?
So we had found in a previous study where we were looking at simply the amount of water that people apply to their lawns during water restrictions. And we found in that previous study that the households that we were looking at applied nearly four times more water to their lawns than was actually needed to meet the lawn water needs. So we saw that even under water restrictions, there is just a vast amount of overwatering. And really most of that overwatering was due to people watering during rainy periods. So just not shutting off their sprinklers when it rained and applying much more water to their lawns than was needed. So the hypothesis for this study that we're talking about today was, if we provide people with information about how much rainfall is contributing to the lawn water needs, will people then reduce their watering? So really based out of that, we were looking for a very simple way to communicate to people how much it's rained recently and what that amount of rainfall looks like relative to the needs of your lawn. And so we developed a sign. It was a basic, simple roadside sign that looked very much like all of the other roadside signs in the area that we were conducting our study. And on that sign, it just said, "This neighborhood is helping to conserve water. The last 7-day rainfall total is however many inches of rain we had received. And most lawns need 1 inch of water per week." And then at the bottom of the sign, it said, "Is rainfall alone meeting the needs of your water?" And so we were really testing whether just a sign like this would prompt people to shut off their sprinklers when it rained and thereby reduce their lawn water use.
And you can take a look at that sign, and we have links to the full study on our website, wgcunews.org. Just click on today's Gulf Coast Live. You are listening to Gulf Coast Live, and we're talking about smart water use in South Florida and a new study that says it's surprisingly easy to keep people informed on how much water they're using and how they can reduce their water use. Call us with your questions or your comments, 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. And Dr. Root, go ahead and tell us, what were the results of that study? What did putting up that sign do?
So we were actually really quite surprised. The sign proved to be tremendously effective. We had two groups of neighborhoods in our study. One group was the control group that didn't have any signs put up at all. They were just under the regular South Florida Water Management District water restrictions. And the other group was our experimental group, which was also under water restrictions, but they also had these signs that we just talked about put up at the entrance to their neighborhoods. And we compared lawn water use in those neighborhoods with the signs, with lawn water use in those neighborhoods without the signs. And we found that water use in the neighborhoods with the signs installed was up to 60% less than the water use in the neighborhoods without the signs, which is really tremendous. And as I said, we were quite surprised to find that something as simple and low cost as just a roadside sign could bring about such a significant reduction in water use.
Yeah, it is remarkable that something is simple. It reminds me of those speed limit signs that simply flash your speed at you, which that's information you have right in front of you as you're driving. But nonetheless, they do tend to have that effect on people. They give you pause and they make you, you know, really examine, am I breaking the speed limit? Am I going faster than I should be right now? Arborist Ian Orlikoff, let me ask you, what are some of the other things you hear about, you know, ways homeowners can adjust their lawn and what's growing in their garden to, you know, not just be mindful of the water restrictions that we have in place, but also just how much water they're getting? What are some things people can do in their lawn to reduce that need for water and I guess have a more natural lawn that takes advantage of the water that's already in our environment in the rainy season?
Well, I think if we go back as far as developing the site, and that's pretty much the bottom line there. If the site is developed properly for positive drainage and then to capture that water in areas that can be utilized for plants that really require more water, it can be designed in a way that that runoff coming from the roof can be utilized and maximize the efficiency of how the landscape performs. We find that in building, the soils are compacted and it's crushed lime rock and it just doesn't percolate very well.
So what does that mean, percolate? I'm not as much of a green thumb as I'd like to be.
It's when the water needs to be able to pass through the soil rather than turning into just runoff and going into the gutters and out into the storm drains. And so having healthy soil conditions allows the water to be captured within the soil and allows the plants to utilize that and growing deeper roots into soil that's loose. And that way they can actually retain water within the plant and not need it right away if they had short roots. So soil conditions are primarily very important to a successful landscape with positive drainage and capturing the water in certain areas as well. It's very important to group plantings that require water with plantings in another area that don't require water. So that way...
Is that to say you want to have a plant next to one where I guess you have one plant that needs a lot of water next to a plant that doesn't? Or do you mean one corner of your garden has, you know, plants that don't need water, the other corner plants that do?
Yes, you want to have plants in groupings with water requirements. And what we find a lot with plants that are having disease issues, we find that they're getting overwatered because they're next to water or plants that need water. And so it's either plant is getting overwatered at one point, and then when the season changes, the other plant is not getting enough water. So the landscape is never really working efficiently.
And you're an arborist, a certified arborist. You have this specialty in trees. How do trees work into the equation here? Are they going to store water for themselves or for your whole garden? Are they going to hoard water, keep it from other plants that might need it?
Yes.
What role do they play?
Yes. Trees are extremely important into stormwater management. They capture the water and retain the water within the root system, and then they'll release it to the canopy as needed. And so the trees can use thousands of gallons of water over the period of weeks. And so if that water is being captured by urban trees and not being passed into the storm system and going into our waterways, they're a huge benefit to increasing water quality and retaining that water in the landscape.
We have a question now from a caller, and I want to get to Dr. Root with some more questions for her and her study in a moment. But first, we have Dana from Naples on the line who has a question about reducing stormwater runoff. Dana, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. Your question, please.
Thank you. I wanted to ask the arborist, what do you ask your landscape company to help reduce that runoff that she was talking about?
Okay. Well, thanks, Dana. That's a question for you, Ann.
Well, to reducing water runoff, plant more trees. We're seeing in a lot of areas where trees are kind of disappearing and being replaced with the one or two skinny palms in front of the house, and that's really not going to be of a great benefit to stormwater runoff. So planting more trees, of course, adding some plants into the area that will enjoy the water that's running off from, say, the storm gutter, that'll capture that water and slow it down and utilize that water. In some cases, it may take some just fine tweaking of the landscape. And in other cases, it may take a renovation and just a design change. And then there'll be more money saved over a longer period of time, but there'll be the upfront cost, of course, of making some of those changes.
And you mentioned those skinny palm trees that are ubiquitous here in South Florida. Are there other types of trees that people could consider that might absorb some more of that water, might be a better choice?
There are some great choices for trees and palms alike in the wet areas, such as Parodus palms. Enjoy wet conditions. They thrive in the swampy Florida landscape and don't require any care. And there are buccaneer palms, sable palms, and any kind of native palm is pretty adaptable to our extreme conditions from one season to the other. The problem we run into is when we're bringing in palms and trees from other areas that are not really evolved into these types of conditions, that we're trying to force them to grow into a situation that they're not going to be very productive.
I want to swing back now to our other guest, Dr. Tara Root with FAU. We had talked in preparing for our show about some of the watering limits that happen across South Florida. Those are set by the South Florida Water Management District, and they can vary from city to city and county to county, but generally they allow homes with certain addresses and certain numbers to water on specific days and usually prohibit watering on any day between the hours of 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Dr. Root, did you find the households in your study, were they even aware of these limits? Did they pay attention to them at all?
Yeah, that's a good question. We do have some data on that, and it seemed like in terms of watering on the specific days they were allowed, so if a household was allowed to water, say, a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, that by and large, the majority of people weren't so much paying attention to which days they watered on. So a lot of people were watering on days that they weren't allowed to water on. However, we also have really good data on watering frequency, and even though they weren't watering on their allowed days, the vast majority of people in our study were actually watering the either at the 3 day or 2 day a week allowed levels or less than that. So it's a little complicated, but in terms of actual days of the week, people were not very compliant with the water restrictions, but in terms of the number of days per week, people were very compliant, if that makes sense.
It does, yeah, and it's interesting that just a little bit of information can change those habits, even when people might be otherwise non-compliant with those restrictions. Dr. Root, if we extrapolate this savings from these neighborhoods, what do you think it tells us about what's possible for conserving water when it comes to lawn care, things like that, in South Florida?
So it's that's also an excellent question. It's very difficult to extrapolate up water use numbers and to give you very much quantitatively on a broad scale. But to just kind of give you a feel, in our study area, in western Palm Beach County, on average, the houses used about 5,000 gallons, a little less than 5,000 gallons of water every time they watered. So if we just do some rough estimates and we say we have a neighborhood of 300 houses, and those 300 houses water three times a week, very consistently as allowed by the water restrictions, Over a year, those 300 households will use about 200 million gallons of water a year on their lawns. So if we look at the results of our study, which showed a reduction of lawn water use of, on average, 50%, that would mean that for those 300 households, if we could reduce water use by 50% on the lawns, we're saving 100 million gallons of water a year.
Wow.
And that's just for 300 households. So you can imagine scaling that up to a larger area, and it becomes very significant volumes of water.
Right. We are kind of coming towards the end of our first half of our show here, but we had a call from Victor in Punta Gorda. Victor, we lost your call, but I have it here in front of me, and I'm going to send that question to arborist Ian Orlikoff. Victor was asking if there's a grass that grows here in South Florida that people could grow in their lawns that would help with unwanted weeds.
Well, that's a tough one. I am seeing some artificial turf out there, believe it or not. Unwanted weeds are going to develop basically in any grass system. Grass is a monoculture, and weeds tend to capitalize in areas of the grass that are weak. And so basically keeping your grass in as best a shape as you can is going to prevent the amount of the weeds to a certain extent, but it's always a battle.
And Ian, while we are, like I mentioned, running out of time here today, but just a few quick rapid-fire questions here. What's one or two things people could do for their home garden that would help them reduce their water waste?
Well, I what I see a lot is very typical in our grasses here is the buildup of thatch. And thatch is the decaying grass clippings that are not decaying fast enough. As the grass grows, that thatch layer builds up into a very thick and dense layer, and that prevents the water from getting to the roots where the grass needs it the most. And so people notice their grass is drying out, and so they'll want to water even more. And so the thatch layer is so important to getting that water down to the roots. Removing that thatch is very important.
I wish we had more time to talk about it. We had some more callers. I want to thank our callers, and I want to thank our guest today, Dr. Tara Root, with Florida Atlantic University, and Ian Orlikoff, certified arborist with Signature Tree Care in Naples. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks for having
me.
Coming up next in the second half of our show, in just 18 months, Pinellas County saw nearly 500 felony arrests for auto theft. A shockingly large number of those arrests were for kids under the age of 18. We're going to listen back to a conversation with reporters at the Tampa Bay Times and their investigation into what's been called an epidemic of car thefts and dangerous joyrides in Pinellas County. I'm Matthew Smith, and this is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.